Thank you for being here. Good to see you. So good to see you. Thank you for being here. So the reason, let me tell you how I came to be sitting up here, okay? I had a profound awakening in 1971, a classic enlightenment experience. I'm a product of the 60s. I was extruded through that mold, you know? So those of you who are of my same generation, you know, you get extruded through the mold, like the cream comes through the cake mold, right? And so you just, whatever the particular time and moment of your incarnation, that's the flavor that we take on. And so that was my flavor, was the 60s. So it was a time of rebellion for me, time of trying to find freedom, trying to find freedom through the politics, trying to find freedom through society, demanding freedom, fighting for freedom. And finally finding myself in fighting against the war in Vietnam, a federal fugitive, and not knowing what to do. We all have crossroads in our lives, certain choice points, certain moments where we have to either choose from our heart or choose from our head. I was in one of these dilemma moments. I was in my 20s. I was fighting against the war. I was a federal fugitive. I had guns. I had dynamite. I thought there was going to be a revolution. I was up in the hills. But I didn't want to hurt anybody. And yet I knew if I'm really one with my brothers and sisters in Vietnam, who they should be shooting down the bombers, so should I. How could I just be sit idly by as my country commits genocide? So that was really the issue of my life. How could you be a good German? How can you allow your country to do these horrible things? And here was my country doing it. And so what do I do? What's my stand? And so I took up arms. And that was, but yet, how do I take a life in the name of life? This is the contradiction that was driving me mad. How do I take a life in the name of life? How do I kill someone to stop the horror? And I found that I couldn't, and I didn't know what to do. I was practicing with my, shooting my gun at my cabin door, and I was being hunted, and the surveillance teams. And so one time on my 24th birthday, I believe, I fasted for 3 days, and I took 500 micrograms of LSD, and which is a very large dose. And after fasting for 3 days and really focusing on this issue, how do I take a life in the name of life? As I started to come on, I became extremely paranoid. I was sure that I was surrounded, they were going to come and get me, they knew I was tripping, this is the time to kill me. And so I thought, okay, they're going to come and get me, they know, and I'm going to die here tonight. And if I die here tonight, you know, what is it about, you know? And I thought, well, I don't know if there's a God or not, because I didn't know if there's a God. I had no teachers, no spiritual background, no religious beliefs. But I thought, if there was a God, God must not know what's happening here. And then if I can die here and call and find God, God needs to know what's happening on earth. And somehow I ended up dying, and I met death, and I left my body when calling for help, and woke up. Woke up as consciousness. No world, no past, no future, no body. Pure consciousness. And in that I woke up, but I knew I wasn't finished. I knew I had to find someone more awake than I was. And I spent 18 years searching for a teacher. And I've had beautiful teachers. I've had a beautiful Taoist teacher and Tibetan Buddhist teachers and Zen Buddhist teachers. But all of them gave me practices, and they all gave me something to do. And while they would recognize my realization, and they would make me the head of the center or whatever it was, they couldn't take me beyond where I'd already realized. And I needed someone who could cut the egoic mind. Because when you, in the awakening that I had, the egoic mind wasn't cut. And so there was this realization of the truth of myself as consciousness and the continuing to run of this story of me, which is common for maybe a lot of people in this community. And so I needed a teacher that could cut the egoic mind. And I found him in January of 1990. Very lucky I found him. He found me. It was like he radiated this call. And I just was drawn like an iron filing to a magnet. And when I walked into his bedroom, he was in his bed, sitting on his bed, and invited me to sit on his bed with him. And as soon as I sat on his bed, I knew I'm looking at my own self. The truth is true. Everything I realize is now confirmed in this moment. I knew this was pure love, looking back at me, seeing me, knowing me. And my mind stopped, which is what I've always wanted. I'd find my mind could stop in certain circumstances. Certainly psychedelics will stop your mind. Teaching will stop your mind. Doing good therapy will stop your mind. Skateboarding or surfing, or if you really get into the zone in basketball, or there are lots of things that will stop your mind, but it's only temporary. I wanted the full stop, and here it was. It just manifested in front of me, just from the emanation of his being. Not anything he said, just the emanation of silence. That's what I was been hungry for, thirsty for, and so grateful for. And so I just fell at his feet and kissed his holy feet. And after 3 days with him, we just spent our time together and went on walks, and his grandchildren would feed us. And I said, well, you know, I don't care about enlightenment anymore. I just want to sleep outside your door and take care of you. And he laughed and slapped me. And I said, okay, well, so I'm still not awake. What do I need to do? He said, well, do you have any thoughts? I said, no. He said, well, give rise to a thought. And so I started to give rise to a thought, and I could feel this bubble of a thought arising. He said, now don't touch it. I didn't touch it, and it sank back down. He said, this is vigilance. Be vigilant. And in this vigilance, thoughts don't arise. And the deeper you're vigilant, the deeper the silence reveals itself. And that's the essential teaching. That's really all you need. And so, after a month of this bliss, I noticed I'd become attached to this no thoughts. And he laughed at me. He said, thoughts or no thoughts, what difference does it make? Have thoughts. And then you realize thoughts are empty. No state is needed. Certain states are very useful because they point to the truth of what's untouched by any state. But then those states go. And our responsibility is to stay vigilant to what's revealed, not to chase the state. Our tendency is to want to recreate the state of bliss or the state of silence or the state of peace and to search for ways of recreating the state. But all states are transitory. But the truth that's revealed is unchanging. And so if you give your vigilance to the truth instead of to the state, you give up the search. And that's my teacher's teaching, is to give up the search. The search is to expect something in the future that will be different than what's here right now. People here give up the search, and they think that means, oh, there's nothing to do, I have no control, there's nothing I can do about it, I'll just continue living my life, and if it happens, it happens. It's not that at all. It's an actual discipline of the unwillingness to pick up the search. That's enormous discipline. The tendency of the mind is to pick up the search for something different in the future, in the next moment, the next year, whatever. So the discipline to stay true here is to close the door on the future. And this is terrifying for the egoic mind, to have no future, because the whole purpose of the egoic mind is to create a safe future, to go from the past into a future, to create a better, happier, safer future. And suddenly, if there is no future, the egoic mind has no function. There's nothing for it to do. And that's terrifying. So we'll try to find escape clauses and deals and compromises and ways of thinking about the future now, but we won't call it the future. We'll call it, you know, visioning or creating my reality or giving myself to God and let God do my future. But it's full responsibility. There's no God to do your future, because there is no future. It's you right here taking full responsibility for your own situation. Then what opens up is the magnificence of your own true nature, your true magnificence, your true purity, your true immaculate, spotless, overflowing love. That's your nature. This is what self means. If when you refer to myself, you refer to this silent, overflowing love, that's the truth. If you refer to myself and you're talking about your name and your form, that's the trance that veils the truth. And generally what the egoic mind wants to do is to enlarge itself to be include the truth of myself as immortal being, or the truth of myself as one with everything. But that's just inside out. The egoic mind is included in the truth of yourself, but the truth of yourself can never be included in the egoic mind. The egoic mind's too small. It doesn't really exist. And so that's why we're here, to give our allegiance back to ourself, to remove our allegiance from our ideas of ourselves, from our conditioning, from our bodies, from our future, from our beliefs, and give our true allegiance back to our true heart, to return to our true nature. And nothing is gained in this. You don't become more of anything, you don't transform into something. You don't become anything that you're not already. You simply stop the imagination of yourself as something different. And the surest, simplest way is to full stop here. Full stop. Full stop reveals silence. Silence, everything is revealed. Then the function of the egoic mind, instead of running from the past to the future, is to dive in and remain, and then to speak, to then be the voice of silence instead of the voice of me, to be the mind of silence, to be the heart of silence instead of the heart of me. And then this is the fulfillment of a human life. Then you know you have reached your full potential. And everything becomes an expression of that. Your life becomes an artistic way of being that. But it's fulfilled. You never need another anything. You're finished, you're complete, you've blossomed. And everything after that is just testing, insight, deepening. But it's from the foundation of fulfillment instead of the foundation of neediness. And that's what we want. That's what everyone is hungry for. Whether people are consciously aware of it or not, this is what everyone, it's the same heart calling us all. You know, the Upanishads, written thousands of years ago, spoken thousands of years ago, said, you know, so rare are those who hear about the self. Rarer still are those who give themselves to its realization. So now, through some grace, it's not so rare anymore. All over the world, there's this explosion of consciousness. People are aware. As a species, we've woken up to a certain new level. That's so beautiful. It's part of our evolution. And this evolution requires each one of us to consciously participate, or not. It's not like a whole species of caterpillars suddenly become butterflies. It's like most of the humans will stay as caterpillars in the foreseeable future. You have to choose. It takes a conscious shock. A conscious shock to snap out of it. And that's the gift of a teacher as well. A teacher gives you that conscious shock of your own heart saying, wake up, come back. Does this resonate? Is this familiar to you? Yeah, good. So I'd like to hear from you what your experience is. Oh, thank you. Yes, please, come up.
Hello. Nice to sit with you.
Oh, thank you.
I want to know how to be with pain in my body, physical pain in my body, after trying many ways to look after it, address it, watch it. I'm not quite sure where to go from here.
Why?
It's difficult. To sit with it?
I mean, why is this a question? What difference does it make how you deal with pain in your body?
It feels like sometimes the pain is blocking me from being here.
Ah. What sometimes, if it's not?
Sometimes it's making me be here.
And what do you want?
To be here.
To be here. And how can the pain stop you from being here?
Like a really loud thought.
And how can a loud thought stop you from being here?
Only if I pay attention to them.
That's right. That's right.
So the pain feels like an even louder thought that I have to practice to not pay attention to.
If you don't fight with it, and you don't do anything with it, you allow it to be as it is.
That's a lot of trust.
Do you feel the pain now?
Slightly.
Just let it be here. Let it be welcome.
It's a bit humbling, which
yes.
is nice.
Yes, it is. So if you allow it to be here, what happens?
I feel like I sink more in.
Yes. So what if you allow everything to be here without resistance?
That's really living.
Yes. That's right. It's really living. That's right. It's the beginning of life, actually.
And being able to do this wherever I am, if I'm at work or someone's talking to me or I'm looking after someone. Or
that's almost impossible, isn't it?
It's pretty hard.
Yes, because the one who wants to do that is the one that's avoiding it. the very thought of how I'm going to do this in the future is how you're not doing it now.
Because I'm worrying about how I'm going to cope in the future.
Yes. And that same one who's worrying about it is the one that's the obstacle. So that's the one that surrenders, that's willing to meet things as they are, that gives up control. So if that one that's worrying, how am I going to do this in the future, right now stops, gives up the burden of control, what's your experience?
Sort of freedom.
Yes, freedom, that's right.
It's actually my teacher.
That's right.
In a way, in a strange way.
Yeah, it is.
Mm. Like I can't, if I don't be here, it'll do something to go be here.
That's right.
So in a way I'm thankful to it.
That's right. That's so beautiful. Then you realize that everything is useful. Mm. It's all here for you to wake up. Then nothing to resist. No need for control.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if now you're willing to say, okay, I've experienced giving up control, and what's the experience? It's freedom. I've experienced allowing the pain to be here. And what's the experience? Sinking deeper. So now what if you don't leave this moment? What if you don't now go, okay, I finished talking, I'm going to go back and start my... What if you don't do that? What if you actually stay with what you've realized? Then it can go even deeper. This is the beginning, not the end.
It's like a really big unknown.
Yes, that's right. Mm. Then you surrender to the unknown. You give up control to the unknown. Even scarier.
Mm.
Even more freedom.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like I've been undoing the knots, the ties.
Yes.
Slowly, year after year.
Yes.
Of trying to control my life, trying to meet the expectations, trying to plan it out.
Yes. And it all brought you to this moment of stopping.
Mm.
So what if you stop even more deeply now?
I think I need to get comfortable.
Sure.
Place to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are you in exactly?
Sort of a little bit moving around here. Mm-hmm. Sort of heavy. Like I don't know if I could get up.
Uh-huh. And what's even deeper?
A big sigh and relief. Trying to control is so much work.
Yes.
Trying to change something is so much work.
It is.
Trying to make some pain go away is a lot of work.
Yes. What relief when your work is over.
My work is over.
Yes. Yeah, welcome. Welcome to the world.
I've never been able to sit in front of a crowd and see so many people. It's really nice.
So what is it that's seeing exactly?
My heart.
Yes.
Seeing all these other hearts.
Yes.
Through people's eyes.
That's it. That's the beginning. So now you have a choice. You'll either continue to go deep, more deeply into this discovery of yourself, or you'll return. To your work.
Yeah, I have a choice.
Yes. It's the most important choice of a lifetime.
Mm.
It's a choice for freedom.
It's really appreciating, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh. I feel breathed. Something's breathing me. That's a nice feeling.
Yes. So beautiful.
Thank you.
Mm, thank you so much.
I'm going to return to my seat. I'm going to return to my seat.
Good.
Even though this one's really comfortable.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming to Australia.
Mm, thank you so much for having me.
Last time I was up here, I was obliterated by Gangaji. I was sitting there, and it was fantastic. It was a real awakening for me after coming to several satsangs over about 10 years in Byron and Melbourne. And I love the energy that it's, I just feel it, I'm awakened to it. And there's this voice. And what I have to ask you is confronting. And I feel nervous about asking this. But it's important for me, maybe for others to hear this. I have a friend, a very close friend, who's got cancer and is deciding treatments and things like that. And she understands meditation and she understands stillness. And I can't imagine what it would be like to be in her shoes. You know what it's like to be in her shoes. And with the stillness, you have to make decisions one way or another with your pain or whatever's going on in your body. So there's a test or an interference or whatever. So you can, I understand you can sit and observe the pain. I have minor aches and pains that come and go, and I sit there and they annoy me, really annoy me, and I find it very hard to find stillness in pain. And yet, this is not even a serious issue I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, how do you deal with that? How do you sit in here, in the stillness, and then have to make decisions and go through whatever interventions you go through?
Be still and see. The more quiet you are, the more obvious everything is. It's really simple. The more noise in your head, the harder it is to make a decision. All the decisions will be based on the noise, and they're all wrong. Even the right ones are wrong. If you're silent, if you're still, they're obvious. It's obvious. And you make a mistake, or you don't, doesn't matter. You learn from it. Everything's useful. Mm. So in my situation with the cancer that I had, what did I do? I didn't know. First of all, I'd never heard of this kind of cancer, and nobody I knew had ever heard of it. And so, did some research on the internet to find out what it was. And then suddenly people started appearing. And I ended up with the man who's the lead guy in the world in dealing with it. He's a sweetheart. But I didn't go through an agonizing process. There was no process. It's what appeared. Mm. Something else could have appeared, and I would have been in that place.
Right. And when you were going through the worst of your treatment, you were able to be still and have that peace.
Yes.
In that moment.
Well, see, if you're willing to die, what's there to resist?
Mm.
That's the key.
Mm.
Not wanting to die, but willing.
So you're saying if you are willing, not afraid of death, that you're willing to try these alternatives or whatever.
Or die, you know. I didn't know. I mean, there was a point where I didn't know if I was going to live or die, and either way was fine. I knew that whatever it was, I wanted it to serve satsang. I wanted it to serve this mission of this body-mind. If dying is what it takes, beautiful. If living is what it takes, beautiful. Really, I wasn't attached to either one. In the past, I've met death and I've been attached. I've wanted to live. I've been willing to die, but wanting to live. And I've died wanting to live, and it was okay. But once you've died, before the body dies, then you're free. Then you do what you like.
Lovely. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. So you've had this profound awakening with Gangaji.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so now this...
After many searching, trying different meditations, which I love meditating.
Yeah, meditating is beautiful.
But, yeah, what I experienced, the vast nothingness of paradoxical nothingness of being or whatever we put a name to it.
Yes, you experienced yourself.
It's transformative, yeah.
Yes, so now what if you actually stay true to what you've realized? Then you wouldn't have had this question for me.
Because I still get caught up in pain, and it just, when I feel some sort of physical pain, I get distracted and it's, my attention goes to that pain.
Yes.
And I pay attention to that, and I find it very difficult to get into that stillness. I can do it with my mind, I can see.
It's believing that what Gangaji showed you was a state of stillness. It's not a state. It's not something to get into.
To be vigilant to.
Okay. To be yourself, actually, is to be stillness.
Mm-hmm.
And the one who wants to be vigilant, who turns away, who has issues with pain, is the one that surrenders to stillness.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Then, noise of the mind or not doesn't matter. You don't pay it any mind.
So it's all noise of the mind.
Yes.
Even the pain.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Uh-huh. But it's real.
Well, there's body sensations, you know. Definitely this body went through a lot of pain. And, you know, how did I deal with it? Did whatever works, you know. They gave me heavy opiates. I didn't like them so much. I found marijuana was the best, better than the opiates for me. So what? Whatever works. It doesn't matter. It's not like, oh, I have to now, without anything, just face this pain. It's a body. It has pain. It's a bag of chemicals. It's a bag of water and chemicals. Don't take it personally.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you don't take it personally, then you realize it's holiness. It's sacredness. Because it gives rise to the possibility for this immortal consciousness to realize itself and to speak itself and to see itself. But if you take it personally as, oh, this pain shouldn't be here, or it's distracting me, and that's all just noise of your mind.
Mm.
Pain is just pain.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're here. So this isn't about necessarily, it's not about feeling better, you know? It's not about getting rid of pain. It's not about how to, you know, not have pain. Pain is part of being in a body. Disease and death are part of being in a body. It's natural. It's not about getting rid of it or transcending it. It's really how to be fulfilled in the midst of it. And you can't be fulfilled as a strategy. You can't, okay, now I have to go back to silence and then, yeah, it's definitely better. Definitely as a strategy, you can always go back to silence and feel better. As a strategy, you can always go to a more transcendental state and feel better. But that's ultimately still a limited strategy, like playing basketball to stop your mind or anything else. Finally, ultimately, what we want is not a strategy, but the realization of ourselves as silence, as emptiness, as love. Then the body appears in that. Then pain appears in that. Thoughts appear in that. Fears appear in that. But they have no sway. They don't have to be here or not be here. You don't have to fight against them, and you don't have to follow them. You can be yourself. And that's why we're here, is to be ourselves. But you can't be yourself until you've realized yourself. And you can't realize yourself until you turn your back on everything else. And it's possible for all of us. That's the good news. There's no difference between us. Not only are we the same, but there's also no difference. If it's possible for this one, it's possible for you. That's the good news. You don't have to be a saint, you don't have to be an avatar, you don't have to be anything in particular. As you are is exactly the right body-mind for realization. This is really my teacher's gift to everybody in the world. He didn't have any requirements except a human life. He felt that was enough. Yes, please.
Hi.
Hi. I think it's on.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I want to meet myself more deeply. I've been fighting to fix myself physically and emotionally.
Yes.
And I feel I'm a failure if I don't fix myself physically. Mm-hmm. I've had the same cancer as you've had.
Uh-huh.
And I've been fighting it, and a few weeks ago I thought it might be coming back, and I started vigorously going back onto diets and fighting again, and it was just the fear of I'm a failure if I don't heal myself.
Who said so?
Well, there's a lot of teachings out there that say that you're not forgiving or you're not...
Forget all of that. None of it's real. Really. None of it's real. That's all bedtime stories for children.
It's hard to accept it.
All bodies die. No matter what you do,
mm-hmm.
Your body's going to die. That's the ultimate failure. No one comes out alive. So then, enjoy it while you've got it, you know.
I find it hard to accept.
Yes. All those beliefs are just burdens. Mm. Burdens. What if we just, for now, you can pick them up later if you want, but now let's just take everything you've ever read or heard or believed or all of it, and just take it and just for a moment leave it out there. Just by the front door. It's like you never read it, you never heard it. You're back to where you couldn't read or you couldn't... No one ever told you what was right and wrong. And what's left?
It's emptiness.
Yes. Emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Can you fix emptiness?
No.
No. It doesn't need anything, does it? So what if, let's imagine for a moment that you are this emptiness. What's your name?
Anne.
Let's imagine that Anne means emptiness. For just a moment, you are emptiness. Yes. Anything needed?
What's that?
Anything needed?
Do I need it?
Do you need anything? As emptiness, do you have any needs?
No.
No. Is that good news or bad news?
It's good news.
Yes. You didn't have to learn it. You didn't have to remember it. You don't have to practice it. You simply gave up all the noise, and here you are.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Anne. As survival machines, of course, none of us wants to die. And that's all our programming is, to survive, quite naturally. Nothing wrong with that. And, you know, life and death situation comes up, take care of yourself. If it's a flood, go in the other direction. Don't run in front of buses. But the willingness to die before your body dies, man, this is freedom. This is fulfillment. And this goes against the conditioning. It goes against the whole programming of the egoic mind. Because the egoic mind believes that it's in charge, and it does, it keeps you safe, and it makes your life. When really we're all just washed along. We just happen to be born, so lucky to be born in this moment with this country and this culture. We're just by chance, you know, just by chance. So many billions of us born in circumstances, we never have this opportunity. We never have this chance. Never hear about the self. Never hear of truth. Survival really is in your face all the time. So, to make good use of this precious opportunity that Mother Earth has given us is to give yourself back. To realize, actually, it has nothing to do with you and your personal control. There are much larger forces at work. And we're just little fish that when the tide comes in, we all decide, oh, let's swim up. And the tide goes out, oh, I think I'll swim down. You know? And so all of us, afraid to die, naturally, we live our lives imagining we're immortal, it's not going to happen to us, and avoiding all thoughts of death, terrified. And so we become very busy and active to avoid the reality that this body's going to die, sooner or later. And it's generally sooner. I mean, even later, what, 80 years, what's that, 90 years, well, nothing, blink of an eye. Flies by. And so rather than being in ignorance of that, our whole life, usually most humans are lived in ignorance of the terror of death. We act as if it's not there. We're too busy. We have babies instead. We create life. We have jobs and games and diversions, pleasures. All of it to avoid this terror of death. But to meet it is a secret gateway into your soul. It's the great initiator. Death is the great initiator. And what the forces that work for death are fear. So fear stands at the guardian of the gateway of death, scares away most people. But if you're willing to be afraid anyway, it doesn't matter. You pass through and meet death, and death initiates you. And you realize what doesn't die. You realize who you are. You realize yourself as this deathless consciousness that was never born and never dies. That's the fulfillment of life. So I'm sorry. Please come.
We're on. Welcome to Australia.
Oh, thank you so much. I love it here so much. I'm so grateful. Oh, my God.
Perhaps. I'm really very confused, which is probably good. Because I'm used to processing everything through the mind, and I've been listening to you last night and tonight and today on CD, and my mind's saying, well, if I'm supposed to stop, then why are you feeding all these words into me, because they're my language?
Hopefully the mind doesn't... Hopefully the words pierce directly to your heart, and that's what you feel, and that's what brought you here. Then the noise and the sounds have no meaning.
Okay, well, I've got 30 or 40 questions, but... The main one that got me today, I was listening to, you were talking about death last night. Today I was listening to you talking about disillusionment and despair.
Yes.
And my mind saying, that's all very interesting. And then I went into this black hole during the day, just totally unexpectedly, because I hadn't thought, I guess maybe it did go through.
Yes, it did. And the mind had nothing control over it.
And there's like a thin line between that despair which is liberating and that despair which leads so many... I mean, the greatest cause of death among young men in Australia and probably in America is suicide.
Yes, because people aren't... It's not the thin line, actually. All despair is liberating if you're willing to go through it. If you're not willing to go through it, you stop and land there, it's unbearable. And so then you either narcotize it, or you avoid it, or you kill yourself, or you get very busy doing something else. You make believe it's not there. But if you're willing to meet it, and you're willing to go through it, all despair is liberating, because it's not real.
So, welcome the black hole.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then you can find what's deeper than the black hole. And the mind couldn't do it. The mind didn't bring this black hole on.
No.
Very beautiful.
No, the mind is saying, yeah. Get me out of here.
Right. Yes. But still, mysteriously, something deeper than the mind is in control. And then you can just trust that. That's what's trustworthy. The mind is not trustworthy. The mind leads to confusion. Leads to doubts. Leads to wrong choices.
It's a long habit, though, the mind.
It is a habit.
It's like smoking for 56 years, you know.
Yeah, have you stopped?
No, I haven't been smoking 56 years. I've been thinking for 56 years.
Yeah, that's right, but same thing. It's really the same thing.
Mm. It's hard to give up.
Well, every junkie or every cigarette smoker or every will say, yeah, it's hard to give up, until they finally say enough.
Mm.
And when you say enough, it's not so hard. It's just enough. That's it. That's all that's required. And then there's a vigilance and a willingness to stay true to that choice of enough. And it gets tested, of course. People start giving you free cigarettes or, you know, free thoughts.
Free thoughts, yeah. Well, we're surrounded by them.
That's right. You're living in an ocean of it. But so what? Once you've said enough, it doesn't matter if they're tasty ones or juicy ones or sweet ones or scary ones, logical ones, insightful ones, it doesn't matter. It's enough. because there's something more deeply trustworthy here, something that is actually calling your heart. And that's what's lovable, and that's what is fulfilling, and that's what your life has been calling for. And so the mind can't understand it. It's in a different realm. But it can surrender.
Well, I hope so. Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if it does or not. Yeah. It's you and your willingness to stay true to yourself, regardless of the thoughts, regardless if they're offering you cigarettes.
It's just like the observer, you know, because
it's deeper than that.
Deeper than the observer.
The observer surrenders into love, into emptiness. Observer surrenders into the black hole, into despair.
So not even observe what the mind's playing, the games.
Why, you know? It's like, if a TV is on, do I have to go and observe it? I'd rather not. So right now, if all your attention falls into your heart, in this instant, the thoughts can still be there. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, it's still working away and saying, well, I read this and I heard that. And
yeah.
First he said, be terrified of death. And he said, I'm not afraid of death. And what the hell's going on here? And
yeah, that's right. And yet you're still here in your heart. And it doesn't matter. Those thoughts are empty. They're machine created. It's like if you'd never seen a radio before, and you walked into a room, and there's this voice talking out of this box, and you go, oh my God, you know, and you start talking back to it, and you have a relationship with it, and you want it to stop, and it won't stop. You can't turn it off. Well, eventually, you stop paying attention to it. You stop giving it any mind. And it just becomes this background noise that disappears. Well, you've got a radio in your head, and it's called me, my station. And all it does is redigest and rebroadcast old stuff.
Yeah, worry about new stuff.
Worried about new stuff, but you can't never know the future. All you can do is project your past into the future. And so, you know, you finally you get tired of the reruns.
Sometimes the reruns are good.
If there's nothing better on.
Yeah.
But there's always...
No rating period.
Yes, but you see, the thing is, there's always something better on. And that's love. And it's fresh. And it's unknown. And it's vast. And it's wide. And it actually moves through this life in unbelievable, unknown ways. And it comes from the unknown. And the unknown is always much more fresh and alive than the known. The known is what's dead, what's past.
Mm. So I'm still confused, but I think it's good.
Okay, so your mind's confused. How's your heart?
That's good.
Very good, yes. Yeah, so then stay with what you love.
It's feeling great.
Good.
Thank you.
I'm so glad. Thank you. So really, this is only about staying with what you love. You know, there's no rules. It's not about what you should do. Not about what, in order to be more spiritual, in order to be enlightened, you should, in order to whatever you should. There are no shoulds. There's no belief. There's no hope. There's no future. It's simply staying with what you love. If you love your mind and you love the thinking thoughts of your mind, stay with it. Stay with it long enough until you hate it, until you're sick of it, until you're bored with it, until you go, enough, I've heard it already. When you're really finished, you're ready to finish. Like cigarettes, you know, you can't really stop until you're ready to stop, or dope, or whatever it is. You have to hit bottom. So if you love your thoughts, stay with your thoughts until you hit bottom. And you'll go, enough. And then when you find love, and when by love I'm not talking about the chemical cascading of falling in love, I'm not talking about any particular state. I'm talking about actually the being of yourself. Formless, immense totality of love that is an ocean, a volcano, it's unspeakable and unnameable. When you fall in love with that, you're falling in love with yourself. And you give yourself. My teacher would say, you make yourself a bride. You make yourself a bride for yourself. You make yourself so pure, so sweet, so lovable that love can't resist you, that love must take you. And then love comes and consumes you. And this holy fire starts. And the fire burns up all the obscurations, all the false identities, all the misunderstandings. So that love can really fully commune and then be in union and then be one with and then be itself. So stay with what you love. I'm so grateful for our time together. Thank you so much. May all beings be happy and free.